course, right the cheeks and warm the heart. For tread the circle thrice about to keep unwelcome spirits out. Bide within the law you must, in perfect love and perfect trust. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Merry meet and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. My guest tonight is Jessica Marie Baumgartner, and she's the author of, well, two award-winning, critically acclaimed children's books, a novella on magical awakenings, a wonderful book called Walk Your Path, The Magical Awakening, and she's here tonight to talk about her latest book, The Magic of Nature, Meditations and Spells to Find Your Inner Voice. You know, it seems like technology has advanced and we've pretty much distanced ourselves from nature, maybe not because we want to, but because it just happens. But Jessica says our connection is still there and now is the time to reopen that line of communication. Now, for those of you who are listening live and you have a question or comment and you're in the chat room, send me a private message. And for those listening live outside the chat, you can join us here at ParaXRadioNetwork.com. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on. I'm so glad to be here.
Good, I am. I'd hate it if you said otherwise.
Right? I doubt anybody's ever said otherwise.
Well, maybe under their breath, but so far so good.
Good.
All right. So the book is about teaching the reader how to connect with magic in the 21st century. And like I mentioned a minute ago, we might be slightly disconnected from nature to some degree. And there might be a few people listening right now that don't think it's a very big deal. But what happens when we lose our instinctual connection with nature?
What I've noticed with most people nowadays is that we start to mistrust our own selves. So when you're not at one with the world around you and you're not connecting with your natural elements, you start to kind of bury those instincts and that inner voice that tells you, you know, where you're going and kind of gives you your internal compass, that guide. And so technology has kind of, I don't want to say that it's buried it or anything like that, but it has kind of distracted us, I guess I should say. And mm-hmm. So we're a little more disconnected from our more spiritual selves because we get so busy with all these different little gadgets to click and like and share and play with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, I just wonder if everybody realizes that we have lost that to some degree. Yeah. What do you think?
I have four kids. So, and my eldest is 11, and I look at the newer generation and a lot of her friends, you know, everything is streaming services. Everybody has a Kindle, you know, my daughter, she does have a cell phone. And so I try to limit those things, but not everybody does because not everybody sees it as a hindrance. And I like to think of technology as a tool. It's a great thing to utilize as long as you're in control of it. But when we kind of take for granted just those natural ways of waking up and greeting the sun or just going outside in the grass barefoot to just sit down and look at a screen and constantly have other people's messages flowing through our brain, it definitely pulls us away from who we are, I think, sometimes. And so trying to find a balance between enjoying modern technology while also still connecting with nature and our greater purpose, that is a very important thing to me. And I think it's important for humanity in order for us to be able to move forward as a people.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, for me, if I'm out in nature of some sort, I just feel better, you know, rather than in the middle of a busy intersection with cars honking or freeway noises and all that. I mean, everybody, whether you realize it or not, would be just kind of nice and cool and whatever when you're not in like a very urban society where things are loud and honky, you know?
You're more relaxed when mm-hmm. you can take your time and it's not rushing or having to worry about, you know, if you're in traffic, you're worrying about the people behind you or if somebody's cutting you off or if there's somebody next to you, there's always something to worry about or looking for the stoplights and taking time to get back to nature and to kind of step away from that, even if you can do it, you know, once a month or something, it gives you a little bit more control over yourself and your mental health, because I know we talk about mental health issues a lot nowadays. And I think that there are a lot of mental health issues that are, if not created, they're at least exacerbated by the fact that we don't have that ability to kind of sit down and just be in our own head and relax as often as people before us used to.
Well, you said we might not have the ability, but I think we do. We just forget, I think, you know, I mean, we're all capable of it, but as you said, we get distracted or whatever, sidetracked on things, but it's important to go back to the simple things and really easy to do. And that's why your book is really important and really interesting. I mean, you know, as everybody's heard me say like 1,000 times, we should not only revere our ancestors, but we should embrace the old ways. And after all, when, you know, we ask, when people ask us what path we follow, many of us say, oh, well, ours is an earth-based or nature-based path, you know, and yet we really get a chance to get out there sometimes and practice what we preach. Was that kind of the basis for you deciding to write this book?
It's really funny because I have been a practicing pagan for about 20 years now, and it's always been a part of me. I've always been connected to nature. I've always, you know, found time to wander through the woods or go creek walking, as I like mm-hmm. to call it, you know. And so when I realized, I had a conscious realization, you know, about 5 or 10 years ago, as I was coming into motherhood, that there are a lot of people don't have that. They don't have that connection, that deep, profound love and that desire, that need almost. Like I crave being in nature. I have to go hiking in order to be a healthy person, you know, inside and out, because I know myself too well. And I know that if I don't do that, that I'll get really stressed and I'll start having, you know, trouble doing the things that, you know, we all need to do, you know, going to work on time and connecting with people. So I finally sat down a couple of years ago and started writing this book because it was like second nature to me. I don't know what happened. Something just clicked and I realized it was time, I guess. I felt like, you know what, you've been doing this long enough and there are people asking you questions. I've always had people, you know, emailing me and being like, how do you do this? How do you do what you do? And I'm like, I really believe that everybody can, you know, even if it's just meditating under a tree 5 minutes a day, everybody can find a piece of nature and just kind of connect with it and redistribute all that energy into themselves and around themselves so that they can really start to feel at one with everything that's out there. Because it's something that when I sat down to write it, I felt like it just needed to be done, mm-hmm. you know, and it was so funny because with some writing, people, you know, writers like to talk about, oh, we struggle with this and we struggle with that. Mm-hmm. Nonfiction has always flowed for me. If I sit down and I say, I'm going to write about this and it's nonfiction, I can just pump it out. So this book just kind of fell out of me. and it was originally much longer than it is now. They cut out about 40,000 words. My editors did.
Wow.
And yeah. and my main editor, Amy, she's wonderful over at Llewellyn. And I love her very much. We worked through a lot, but, it's come into its own and I'm very proud of it because I find a lot of people going, these are things I've been wanting to do. And I kind of just needed that extra push, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you cover all bases, even things that we kind of take for granted, you bring that back in, you know, it's like, oh yeah, what about that? You know, kind of thing. But you also say that this book, it's a book of guidance on preparing mm-hmm. the mind, the body, and the spirit. Now, what is it that we should be preparing for?
Well, there's a lot going on in the world. I'm sure notices that.
Yes.
I'm a bit of a prepper. Mm-hmm. My grandpa, my maternal grandfather was a World War II vet, and we used to write him off as just this crazy old man, but he taught me a lot of really good, you know, survival things and just silly stuff about stocking your pantry and being prepared for if, you know, we're cut off from supplies. Mm-hmm. And so last year when the grocery sales started emptying, we were okay because we had, you know, a couple of weeks supply of food in our basement. And I was so grateful that I had that. And I've I'm always a person, if my neighbors, I'm always checking on my neighbors. Are you okay? Do you need something? Because I don't want to hoard things. I feel like we should all do our part. But it was real awakening last year for a lot of people, I think. And I kind of hate the term awakening because everybody's, you know, like, wake up. And everybody's like, oh, we're all asleep. And I'm like, we're not asleep. People just don't know where to direct their energies sometimes. There's so much out there and so many things to do and so much news coming at us constantly. And it's hard to pick one course and just follow that path and know that you're on the right path. And what I've learned in my journeys, at least, is that if you are more in tune with nature, you will be able to know that you're on the right path because when you start to veer, you'll feel that it's wrong.
Yeah. You have to listen to your instincts. And a lot of people don't. I mean, they don't trust. They might listen, but they might not trust them. And we'll talk about that down the line because that's in the book, too. But, you know, now you're talking about, you know, normal things, mundane reasons that we have to prepare for it. But I don't know about you, but I've been hearing for years and years metaphysically that mm-hmm. our metaphysical world is also changing. It's shifting ask somebody and they all say it's shifting into a different way. But everybody kind of says, yes, the world is shifting around us, the metaphysical world, and we need to do something spiritually also, right?
Absolutely. So, and I wish I was a better astrologer. I'm trying to study more on that because I've liked to study throughout the years. I'm very big on studying Sibelique. And most recently I was studying a little bit of Madame Blavatsky, which is, that's a weird history there. And, and my husband's a Crowleyan. So there's a lot of different influences from the old realm. But what I'm looking at is we used to, you know, everybody was talking about 2012 and the Mayan calendar. And mm-hmm. what we didn't, I think what a lot of people didn't acknowledge, I think a lot of people in the metaphysical realm probably did, was that the universe, you know, our place, our position in the universe was shifting. And because we do, you know, our universe does shift. It's not, you know, just sitting there doing nothing. It's kind of floating around and it is connected and it is, I don't want to say solidified, but, you know, we have our planes and we have our gravitational poles, and it's not like we're being knocked out of that or anything. Mm. But we know that things are changing and expanding. And I am a firm believer of the theory that the poles have shifted, mm-hmm. Which there are a lot of scientists, you know, it's not 100% confirmed because how do you measure that? But if you look at what's going on in the weather and with what's going on in different areas of the world, you can feel and you can sense and you can measure even that there has been some kind of a change. And there are many factors, of course. You know, we have human elements and we have the natural elements and we have our position in the universe. And I think that all of it's kind of just coming together all at once. So I do believe that there is this spiritual need to open ourselves up to the possibilities that what we think we know isn't even the tip of the iceberg. It's not even like the little fingernail on your hand. That we as a people, we can do a lot more and we can change a lot more, even just with our energies and our own inner power, and to harness that and be able to put it out there with balance. You know, when I was younger, everybody was always emphasizing being good. And I love the idea of being good, but at the same time, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I love that saying because you can put so much good energy out there into the world and it's not going to come back the way you think it will. Yeah. And so balance has always been, at least recently, I shouldn't say always, it's been a constant path that I've been veered toward.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've said this before, there's a duality out there. You can't have good without bad or light without dark, you know, and both of those elements, light and dark, are within us. And it's kind of, I mean, I really appreciate people who think everything is love and light and there cannot be any bad, but I just don't think that's exactly true in my mind anyway. So, yeah, if you walk that tightrope, I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be one extreme to the other that you're goody two shoes or you're Jack the Ripper, you know, or something like that. You know, it's not that. But you have to kind of allow both of those things to mingle in you in order to find that perfect balance, I think.
Well, and to find your humanity, and I don't even want to say humanity, because in nature, you know, we talk about, oh, the animals. I'm a huge animal lover, mm-hmm. and I worked for a very famous zoologist in St. Louis for a while, and I really loved that job. But the more that you study animals, the more you realize they're not better than humans. We are just another animal. And you see that there is that light and dark. You know, you have those maternal moments where certain animals are the best parents in the world. Even there are good fathers in nature that just love their babies, and you can see and you can feel that energy just radiating off of them when they have their young. Mm-hmm. And then there are animals that go to war. We're not the only creatures out there that do that. Mm-hmm. And that is a very strange realization for some people, because if you haven't, you know, if you're not a big biology nut or you're not really into studying different types of species, that can be kind of a knock in the head to realize that, you know, mm-hmm. that balance, it really is everywhere. And if you kind of give into it, or if you kind of just open yourself up to it and understand that it all brings us to the same place, it all brings us to this knowing and this understanding realm, it releases so much tension, and it mm-hmm. kind of frees you. It's very freeing.
Yeah, it is. It's cathartic when you, and you understand, you without even thinking, you will feel the balance. And yes. You'll all of a sudden have that sense of calm, or that you're in control, because a lot of times we think, well, we're not in control. Our environment is controlling us, the people we're dealing with, the work, mm-hmm. the this and that. But once you obtain that balance, it's kind of amazing. And, you know, you've got a lot of exercises in the book. And I forgot to tell you this earlier, but during the break, can you figure out one of the earth meditations to kind of do it when we come back from the break?
Sure.
Okay.
I don't even have the book with me right now, but it's so funny. The meditations and the exercises that I wrote down, I cut out so many, or cut down on what I wanted to put in, because it's a regular practice. So it feels mm-hmm. like I'm just constantly trying new ways to immerse myself in that special, like, mind frame where you can just mm-hmm. sit back and be who you are.
That's difficult, because sometimes we don't know who we are. We know who we might have been, or we might know who we want to be, but mm-hmm. I'm never sure that people are certain about who they are. I mean, at that moment, in the present, it's
yeah.
strange.
Well, we also, I think that it's because we get distracted again with all the labels and all of the genres and all of that. You know, as a writer, you know, there's, you can't do this genre if you do this genre, and I write everything. So,
yeah, me too.
Right? Well, that's what, it's like, there's so... When you limit yourself, you are really selling yourself short. You're not able to be a whole being. You know, if you just kind of open up and find out what works best for you, you don't have to package it. You don't have to label it. You can just be. And that's more of an Eastern philosophy, but mm-hmm. it ties into paganism, and it ties into all spirituality, honestly. I really believe that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the interesting thing, too, with the book is that you also kind of meet in the middle, because there are practices to use when we can't be directly in nature. So, you know, they're really, you've taken away everybody's excuse for not wanting to do what they should be doing, you know, because you got the yin and the yang here. And, you know, that's kind of important. But, you know, when you say that we need to get back to nature, some people are going to argue that they don't have access to nature because they live in an urban setting. But communing with nature isn't just finding a forest or a secluded mountaintop or somewhere off the beaten path. I mean, even those who live in high-rise apartments where there isn't any grass to walk on, they can still get back to nature by creating nature in their own environment as in indoor gardening, right?
Yes. So I love the idea of, you know, the spiritual guru who's out in nature, climbing mountains all alone, being at one with their creator or creators. But at the same time, I kind of like, to me, it's like a parody of real life, because who can do that? Like, it's metaphor in my head. Like, I don't know that many people can do that. And when they do that, they're isolating themselves from their fellow man. So I feel like that kind of breaks off a whole other line of communication. And I don't know, I was studying Grigory Rasputin, his daughter. I know everybody talks about Rasputin, you know, in culture. His daughter, Maria Rasputin, wrote this beautiful book about her father. Mm-hmm. And it tells his story from his perspective, and of this beautiful story of, you know, this man who was born basically a saint with this healing gift, and he was he loved all the animals and he loved people, and he was vilified by, you know, the religious organizations because he didn't want to charge people for his gifts. So he would heal people for free, and they didn't like that. They wanted him to charge them. And I don't, you know, it was written by his daughter, so we don't know how true that is. But his journey was, you know, that stereotypical go off into nature and, and find, you know, this vision, and you share it with the people. So I guess I shouldn't say that it's just metaphor, but I feel like sometimes we use it too often as a metaphor. But when, like, I've lived in numerous settings, I've lived, you know, in the suburbs, I've lived in the country, I've lived in the city. And when I lived, like, when I lived in LA, and I didn't live there very long, I really didn't. I was going to be a singer. Everybody was like, oh, you're so talented and blah, 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 blah. And so, you know, I went and I had a shot. There was an entertainment company, and that's like a whole other lifetime. But while I was, that's what it feels like. But I was, you know, I was 21 and I was young and I was living in the Cecil Hotel, which is not.
Oh, no, not there.
Yes. Oh, my God. So haunted. And it was before they found the one girl's body in the water tank, too.
Right.
It was like a couple of years before. But and the strangest things, you know, like people would, I would get knocks on my door and there'd be nobody there. And I'm like, maybe somebody's knocking and running. But I was in the middle of a very long hallway, so they had to run really fast. And just strange, bizarre things. But
and the neighborhood wasn't so good either.
That is Skid Row.
Yes.
I have always found that you find the best people in the worst places. I really believe that, because there were so many people who looked out for me. And that, I think, that was such a gift to have that. To be able to connect with people on that different level. But I missed the trees, you know. I missed, you know, having nature all the time. So I would walk everywhere, and there was a park, I guess, it might have been three or four blocks down. And I loved going to that park, but there were it's so funny. I want to go back. It was constantly just full of homeless people just sitting there. And so that was kind of a bummer too. And I've always said, I'm going to go back and I'm going to just order like 100 pizzas and bring them, which is now a felony, or at least it was last time I checked in California, to feed the homeless, but I still want to do it anyway. So I started, like, I was trying to find a way to like connect with nature and not have all of this, I don't want to say reality, because you need to be in reality, but sometimes it's so real, you need to step away. And I was definitely experiencing culture shock, because I was on my own for the first time in a new city. And it was pretty wild. So, so I started like grabbing like gravel or rocks, or if I found like a flower growing in the concrete, I would pick it and I would take it home with me. And I mean, in my hotel room, which was small, it was this little room. I did spring, I did pay a little extra, so I had my own bathroom, but.
Oh, good. Thank God. You might not be here then if that didn't happen. Anyway, yes.
Like, but, just even just finding a flower and picking it and bringing it to my room and then sitting down and just holding it in between my palms, just kind of cupping my hands over it, closing my eyes and taking some deep breaths and just reminding myself that it doesn't matter where you live. These things grow, you know, you can't stop it. And I being a musician, I always loved different types of music. You know, I play guitar and I sing, and I've kind of realized that music is, that's what it's for. It's your spiritual connection. It's not necessarily a moneymaker or your livelihood. But but I did like, you know, Tupac and his poetry book. He had The Rose That Grew From Concrete, and I always think of that when I think of LA now, because I get it now, because that's where he was, and he wrote that, and I just thought it was one of those things that it doesn't matter where you are. You can have a potted plant, you know, you can get something, even if you don't have sunlight, you know, if you don't have a window with sunlight, you can pick up a rock, you know, even just a little piece of stone. And that is a good connection to nature. You know, we, in the pagan community, we always talk about gems and stones, and I'm not as much, you know, I'm not always looking for my amethyst or looking for the crystals and whatnot. I just like finding the plain little rocks, the ones that remind me of just earth.
And those will call to you. You know, you'll look into, you'll look down and you'll find the exact perfect one. You know, it's like they're waiting for you.
And waving at you, like spiritually. You look down and you're like, okay, you're going to come with me and hang out for a while.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's kind of very important. I mean, even, well, and if you don't have sun coming in, they have the grow lights and, you know, little tiny ones that you can put in tiny little pots. I was looking at that the other day. Just, you know, for one or two little plants and just on a table. So, yeah, there's just something about having nature in the house. You know, I mean, if we have our pets and everything, that's good. But I've got rocks. I've got rocks from the yard all over the place, wishing stones and just ones that caught my eye. I mean, I've got rocks in my head. I've got rocks all over the house. I mean, it's just kind of a nice thing to do. And you're just kind of comforted with it. I mean, I've got the gemstones also and the crystals. I mean,
yeah, I do.
But yeah, but it's just, there's something about something that you just pick up out of nature that you didn't know, even think about, you know, an hour before. And all of a sudden you come upon that, or just, you know, like you said, a picking a flower at a crack in the sidewalk, like a dandelion or something. And, and it makes a really big difference. We're going to go to break just pretty soon, but really quickly, I just want to talk about people getting, knowing to their inner selves or hearing their inner voices.
Yeah.
You know, how do we recognize it, and how do we know it's just not our brain working overtime?
That's a really good question. I think it takes practice. It takes a lot of meditation. Meditation for me is like where everything starts. You know, people do spell work, and we have all of these rituals and practices, and you can pray to the gods, or you can, you know, bow down and light a fire and dance before the moon. But until you have kind of cleared your mind of all the cobwebs or been able to focus on not thinking, then you don't know if you're just not in overdrive. And I think a lot of people suffered from rapid thought. Like, I know I am one of them. One of the first meditations, or one of the first practices I did when I was a teenager, was taking a pen and tapping a piece of paper every time my thoughts changed. And I had a stopwatch.
Wow.
And I was supposed to just let it go for a minute. And it was more than 60. I mean, I was just constantly tapping the paper because, you know, our thoughts, especially when you're thinking about thinking, then suddenly, you know what I mean? Like, you're just suddenly, and it goes into overdrive, and your brain, it's this amazing, wonderful machine, but it's also very complex. Mm-hmm. And in order to understand yourself, you have to learn how to control your brain. And that is something that a lot of people, I think, are lacking right now. And I think that is connected to our obsession with technology and our lack, you know, our disassociation with nature. Because when you are outside, you know, working in a field, or when you're taking a walk, or if you're climbing a tree, or if you're just, you know, walking down the street holding a rock in your hand, and you're just focusing on that energy, it kind of slows down those thoughts. You're focusing on something. You're able to direct your energies and say, I'm in control now. This is me, and I'm making the conscious decision to think this thought. And so if you can do that, that's where the meditations really branch off from. Once mm-hmm. you're able to sit down and say, okay, I'm thinking too much, I need to be able to sit down for 30 seconds without any thoughts in my brain, which is exceptionally, it's still difficult for me mm-hmm. to do. I mean, mm-hmm. years and years I've been practicing this. I'm a fire sign. I mean, that's my sun sign. So I like to meditate on fire, mm-hmm. you know, light mm-hmm. a candle and yeah. just look at the flame. Mm-hmm. And that helps me clear my mind. My one daughter, she's really connected to water. So if I just fill a little bowl of water for her, she dips her fingertips in, and that does the trick for her. Oh, there, nice. Yeah, there are all these little things that we can do to just kind of slow the thoughts and mm-hmm. help us gain our focus. And that's when you really start to differentiate between, oh, I'm just thinking too much, and oh, this is really something. This is me. This is who I am. And this is that message that won't shut up. And that, mm-hmm. that's what I call it. You know, when you have something that's echoing and it refuses to get out of your head, even when every other thought is gone, then you know, and you'll feel that, you know, you feel it inside that this is where I'm supposed to be. This is the direction that I'm going. And then you can kind of focus more on that instead of veering off in all these different places trying to figure out mm-hmm. where am I going? What am I thinking? What am I supposed to do with myself?
Scrambled eggs in our head.
All right.
So we're going to take a break. So everybody that heard her advice, you've got 2 minutes to kind of calm it down. And we'll be back. And when we're back, Jessica will take us through one of the earth meditations. So everybody, stay put.
Stirring the Cauldron will be right back, so don't go away. If you end up with webbed feet, remember, you've been warned. Explore the second edition of the Witch's Oracle deck through 45 innovative cards and enhanced guidebook that peers into the world of the witch. The deck's stunning artwork has a new look and includes 7 brand new inspirational cards. Each card now includes a suggested crystal or gemstone to enhance your reading, as well as a magical incantation that provides energy, reinforces the card's meaning, and helps the desired message to be sent out into the universe. The easy-to-navigate guide also has a new look and offers straightforward, gentle guidance that takes readers through both good times and bad. And now includes a chapter on crystal and gemstone divination by the amazing Nicholas Pearson. The Witch's Oracle. It is a perfect divination deck for witches as well as non-pagans, and is designed to suit both seasoned readers and beginners alike. Find out more about the Witch's Oracle deck at www.marlabrooks.com, and you can purchase the deck from shifferbooks.com, amazon.com, or order a copy from your favorite bookseller.
You've no doubt heard of Tango and Cash, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, perhaps It Takes Two to Tango. Well, now, on the first and third Thursdays of each month, there's a show called Tango and Friends at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network with your host, Bruce Tango. And yes, there will be at least two to tango on each episode, sometimes even more. There's going to be lots of topics and lots of guests you'll all know, and lots of surprises. Tango and Friends, every first and third Thursday of the month at 8 p.m. right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
My guest tonight is Jessica Marie Baumgarten, and we, as I mentioned before the break,
going to have her do an earth meditation from the book. But I'm still having people tell me that they can't concentrate long enough to meditate. So before you get into that, what's your best advice on meditation? Because everybody can, whether they know it or not.
Well, you know what? Maybe we can do something that is more of just a mind-clearing meditation then, because that is the first step to meditation. So I'm going to I'm actually moving around my bedroom now. if you can sit on your floor and, you know, get comfortable, you don't have to, I'm not going to be like a guru, like you have to be in any one position. You know, I like to sit crisscross applesauce because, you know, I've got four kids and my dog is laying next to me. He came in while we were talking about rocks. So I was like, oh, it's perfect. Mm-hmm. But, if you sit down and you just relax, I know that like the typical position, people think, you know, putting your thumb and your finger together and you're sitting there. I have actually found that I kind of make a triangle with my body. So if you take, your right hand or your predominant hand and put it over your wrist, like grab your wrist of the other hand and then kind of lock your hands together, like you're almost holding your wrists. Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense?
I'm doing it. It works. Yeah, go ahead.
And then, so your elbows are out and you're sitting up tall and you're kind of almost making this triangular formation, which the triangle for some reason has been connecting with me a lot. And that's probably the fire in me. But your third eye, I feel like it kind of opens that up more. And so instead of focusing on a word or a thought, I want everybody to just breathe deep and kind of focus on that space, you know, on your forehead, in between your eyes, where that third eye kind of exists. And this is, you know, it's just what works for me. It might not work for everybody. And if you're just kind of breathing in and breathing out and just focus on that space in your body. And you just breathe and just keep looking forward, you know, eyes closed. You can leave them open if you want. Relaxed shoulders, but still sitting upright and just breathing and just being. And that focus, you don't have to worry about, you know, if your mind does start to wander a little, if you feel it veering, if you feel anxiety or thought about, you know, oh no, at 9 o'clock I have to do this. you need to breathe deeper and just kind of almost focus your energies to your forehead, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I always, in the book, I talk about pooling your energies where you feel like it originates from. And for me, it's right kind of by my sternum on the inside of my body. And so I kind of imagine a light there. And it usually gets warm when I do that. And then I move that light upwards into my forehead, my third eye. And I just imagine that beam of light pooling throughout that area, giving me that guidance and giving me that serenity, that peace, and just breathing deep and easy, calm and secure. There's nobody else here. It's just you in the world. All right, I'm getting lightheaded now, which is good. You should get lightheaded. That's when it really starts to work. That's mm-hmm. when you know that you're kind of almost like you feel like you're swimming mm-hmm. in that darkness in your own head. That's when you're really reaching out into that spiritual self. You're getting outside of the mental brain and mm-hmm. you're getting into that spiritual connection that kind of connects us. I call it the dream world because I really mm-hmm. believe the dream world is what is like the gateway to the spirit world. Mm-hmm. And I wish we had more time. I could just sit there and do that all day.
Well, maybe I'll have you back one of these days to do that.
I hope that helped somebody.
It probably did because here's the thing. I mean, I'm listening to you and I'm following what you're doing. And my third eye opened on its own. I didn't tell it to. And I saw with the third eye. I mean, I had my eyes open because I'm always looking at the chat room. Mm-hmm. But that third eye opened up and I saw this long road in front of me, somebody way, way ahead of me walking, and a big mountain. Mm-hmm. So I'm listening to you. I'm looking at that. But the third eye is showing me something else. And it kind of blotted everything out. You know, I was kind of like, wow, okay. You know,
it's like a tunnel is what I kind of think. Yeah. It's almost like it transports you to this whole other space. And time just kind of stops existing. And this week has been really weird for time with me. I lose track of time and everything too often this week, at least. It has been it's been a thing. It's this time of year. This time of year, the veil thins. And yeah. I start getting lightheaded a lot. And I mm-hmm. start seeing or hearing. And you just kind of give into it when you can and focus when you can't.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, just jumping back to the book for a second, I mean, it's loaded with exercises and spells and rituals and meditations. I mean, you've covered all bases and you really don't skimp. All right, for example, the chapter the chapter on earth meditations is 30 pages long with tons and tons of various meditations to cover everything that you would ever need to cover. Mm-hmm. I mean, how long did it take you to come up with all those meditations?
The thing is when I was sitting down to write it, I was in like a trance, you know, and I was just writing things that I've done. That's all it was. I was like, what do I do when I go outside? Because I don't even know half the time. You know, every day I try to meditate in the morning. And sometimes I go outside and I'm like petting a tree or I press my palms up against a tree trunk. That's one of the big ones for me is you stand underneath a tree and you put your palms against the tree trunk and you lean into it and you look up. Mm-hmm. And that is such a different perspective than what we're used to seeing because you see that height and you feel that energy and that specific like connection that you have to this great plant that is you couldn't live without it, you know. Mm-hmm. And so taking moments like that, that's just something that it's been like a life's work, I guess. So when I sat down to write the book, those just started pouring out of me. And I was like, okay, well, what did I do this morning? Oh, well, I can put that here. And when was the last time I went in a cave and did a meditation? Oh, I can put that. The cave stuff, not to segue too far, but the cave stuff is really important to me. Mm-hmm. I don't get to do cave work very often. But the few times that I have, they made such an impact on my life that mm-hmm. I felt they had to be there. And the publisher was a little nervous about safety. You know, we don't want to be liable for anybody getting hurt. So I had to kind of tone it down. We had to take out a couple of things and I had to warn people, you know, make sure that you're going on public land, that you have permission, that you know, people know where you're going, that you're in a group, you're not going to get hurt.
Yes.
The common sense things that, you know, some people don't think about when they get excited and then they're ready for a journey. You know, when you're on an adventure, you don't always think about the safety and covering your bases, myself included. I'm constantly getting hurt just in my own backyard. And
yeah, we trip over things.
We do. Mm-hmm. We do. And my husband is always like, he comes home from work because he does delivery stuff on the weekends. And he'll come home from work on like a Saturday or Sunday. And I've dropped a tree trunk on my foot. And he's like, what were you doing? Well, why were you moving this? You know, you're not supposed to move these things. And I'm like, but I was trying to get to the beetle underneath it. He's like, okay, what is wrong with you? We're not having conversations with beetles and breaking your foot. Like,
I can really understand that because I do the same thing. I walk very carefully and sometimes a lizard will walk in front of me and I'll jump up, you know, oh, save the lizard, you know.
You get so excited. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's just the way it is. But, you know, in going through the book, you cover just about everything that nature has to offer. Aside from earth meditation, you have chapters on gardening, hiking, swimming, sleeping outdoors, fire, trees, hunting, fishing, foraging, and handiwork. And they're all very comprehensive. And each topic, I mean, it doesn't matter how diverse those are who are listening in, there's something for everybody in this book that fits perfectly with the reader. I really, it must have taken you ages to put this book together. I mean, I know you said you cut a whole lot of it out, but between you know, putting it all together, cutting it out, I mean, research, and I'm sure you learned a few things along the way as well, didn't you?
You absolutely learn so much when you write down, even if it's things that you've done, you don't really learn from it at the full scope until you sit down and you either study or think or you write it down. And I did, when I sat down originally, I kind of wanted it to be like the pagan Bible. I wanted this to be like everything you could possibly need, because there's a lot of books out there that I've read and there's it always felt like there was something missing to me. You know, I love reading Sibylique stuff, but she was very secretive about her rituals and whatnot.
Because she was.
She was, and it was a different time. It was very much a different time. Mm-hmm. But I like to lay it all out there. I'm a very open-hearted person. I don't hide things from anybody. You know, discretion is kind of an important thing because you don't know who you're talking to if you're talking to a stranger about it. But but there is this amazing like connection that you have with yourself and the world around you when you really are present in your experiences. Mm-hmm. And that's something I've always tried to do. So for about 20 years now, I've been, you know, I like to test things. I'm not a person who learns by just reading something and going, oh, okay, that's how you do it. I have to test it. I have to experiment. I have to say, well, what if I change this a little bit? What if I do it this way? Well, what if I invent my own spell and it goes this way? Mm-hmm. And so I've always tried to listen to the gods and the energies around me to kind of form those things on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And so again, when I sat down to write the book, I was really, it was almost like I was remembering what I had already done over the past, I mean, it was 20 years of work, basically. And I guess at the time it was 18, but, still. But I did not, for the longest time, I kind of didn't want to be just a pagan author. And I look back on that and I'm like, why didn't I want to do that? That is what I am. I'm pagan and I'm an author and I like writing and I really like connecting with people who love to read and write spirituality. So I don't know why I had that in my head for so long. I don't like boxes and I don't like labels. So I was, I guess I had a little bit of fear. You know, I've never been really closeted, but there is always an element of fear out there still. And so when I finally made that decision to commit and to be like, this is what you're supposed to be doing. Stop messing around and get to it. I was able to just pull from all of those experiences and, you know, and being a mother helps too, because my kids almost make me relive everything because I have to teach it to them now too.
Right. Sure.
And I was raised, you know, my mom is she was Catholic. She's a Christian and my sister's an atheist Christian, which that's a whole new like thing. A new thing. It's like she doesn't really believe in God, but she likes the tenets of Christianity, the basics. So I was like, okay, well that's cool. Uh-huh. But my mom raised us, you know, with the whole ideology that religion is a man-made thing and your spirituality is your connection to your God or your gods.
Yes.
And so having that in my life was so helpful in being able to be who I am and to not have to worry about fearing that at home. And anybody who's had to fear that at home, I really feel for you. And I want you to know that there is a whole world of people out there who will support you and love you no matter what, you know, that's what we're here for. But, but I'm trying to teach my children the same thing. You know, I would love for you to grow up and follow in my shoes, but you've got your own shoes to walk in, you know. And my husband, you know, he's of Jewish heritage and it's so funny because he's very spiritual, but he kind of bounces around. You know, he's a Jewish mystic sometimes and then sometimes he's a Crowleyan. So it's very strange, but our house is full of magic all the time and a lot of love. And that is something I hope I conveyed in the book. I think the last chapter I end up kind of ending it with love. And it always comes back to that. When I did The Magical Awakening, Walk Your Path, love was kind of a center force in that book. And that was not something that I had planned. It just kind of, it was like that book was a spell. That book was the precursor to this one, because I was trying to figure out what I was doing with my pagan writings. I don't know if you ever read stuff on The Witch's Voice, Witch Fox. That's where I got my start. Where my first real piece was published. And so I guess it might have been my second, because I ended up with a column in the very beginning. I just walked into a column I was working for the St. Louis Examiner, writing about being a pagan in St. Louis. It was amazing. And they just gave me the job. I pitched it and they gave it to me right away. And I was very lucky for that. The Witch's Voice, they started having a lot of glitches, and I think the tech support had a lot of trouble. And it was right around the time I wrote Walk Your Path. I realized the site, they had announced that the site was going away. And I was like, oh no, I have all these essays and all these writings that are just going to be gone. They're just going to be gone. And I had so many great people who had written me and had asked me questions or who had shared their experiences. And that it's such a gift when people reach out to you like that. I always try to answer everybody and to be as welcoming and as sincere as possible, because everybody wants to be heard and everybody wants to have some kind of connection. You know, they want to know that they matter to people. And every person that I've had an exchange with, I it's like, you do matter to me. Everything, everything matters here. And so that book came out of it, and I submitted it to Llewellyn, and they were like, you know, this is kind of like, it was instructional, but it was also memoir. I was drawing too much from my past experiences. So they were like, we can alter this book, and we can maybe do something with it. And so I talked to who is my now is my editor there, Amy. And I was like, well, I think I'm going to go with a different publisher with this book, but I have an idea for another book. And that's where this one, I had already outlined it. I was like, it was not originally The Magic of Nature. It was originally The Internal Compass. Because it's still the same idea, you know, centered on that inner voice and awakening and the meditations and spells and rituals and the philosophy behind, you know, staying in tune with nature, even when you're surrounded by technology. Doesn't matter if you live, you know, like you said, in a high-rise building or if you live in a farmhouse in the middle of nowhere, we can all connect with nature on a same basic level. And that, to me, that is such an amazing feat that somebody can be planting, you know, something in a little pot in their home, and they can live in a completely different area and lifestyle than somebody else who might be planting the exact same type of plant in a pot in their home. That is just beautiful to me.
Yeah. I mean, this whole thing is truly amazing. And, you know, you're talking about your other books, and we don't have time to get into really the chapter on trust, because the hour flies by really quickly. But I want you to tell everybody where they can, you know, give your website information out there so they can kind of get an idea of what's cooking, because there's a lot of stuff there.
I write a lot, and I write a lot of nonfiction, and I do some fiction still. My speculative fiction, it's more just for fun. So I put up chapters of like a free novel that I'm doing right now that I wrote ages and ages ago. So don't judge me too much by it. But you can go on my website, and it is literally just my name, JessicaMarieBaumgartner.com, and it has the links to everything out there. And I am on Goodreads. I have my Amazon Author Central page, but if you're going to, you know, get into my books, do a favor for your local bookstores. I prefer the local shops more than or the metaphysical shops. You can order them through any little shop. And I try to stay off of social media. I like minds.com, which most people haven't even heard of, because I am a free speech advocate. You know, I don't want people to be jerks to each other, but, you know, I want people to not be afraid of being able to say something either, too. So, I like joking around on there. That's the most fun, is when you can just joke around with people.
Yeah. That's kind of hard to do. You know, in this day and age, it's people take everything so seriously, and you try to joke and either, you know, they look at you like you're crazy, or they're just, you know, oh, you mean you're really kidding? You know, I mean, that was a joke. You know, we sometimes don't recognize it. But, you know, you should come back and we can talk about a whole bunch of other stuff that we didn't get to today.
Absolutely. That would be great.
I want to thank you for being my guest tonight and sharing this really insightful book. I mean, we just, you know, like I always say, we've just tip of the iceberg. There's so much more in there that we haven't even talked about. So, you know, people go take a look at the book. And as always, I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight and for those who will be listening to the podcasts. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Good night.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for another great guest and more fun. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2009.
You have been listening to the Para-X Radio Network.